What happened in the Battle of the Pelennor Fields, that epic battle outside Minas Tirith towards the end of the Return of the King? How close were Sauron's forces to taking the city, and how important was it in the context of the overall war? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover The Lord of the Rings in nerdy detail, as well as other great fantasy worlds like A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. This is the latest in a series of videos breaking down the action of the War of the Ring. Last time, we took a quick pause to look at the relative army sizes we see in the war. Now we'll return to what was probably the largest battle in that war, the Battle of the Pelennor Fields. First, let's set the scene. Denethor has been waiting a long time for Sauron to finally strike towards Minas Tirith and has called in his allies. The Red Arrow has been sent to Rohan, and the southern fiefs have been ordered to send all they can spare to aid in the defence of the capital. And on the 10th of March, Sauron finally sends forth his army. They are overshadowed, literally, by dark fumes and clouds emanating from Mordor, covering the sun and allowing the army to move out. It becomes known as the Dawnless Day. The defenders in Minas Tirith knew then that battle would be with them within days. It sent a sense of dread ahead of it. The Witch King led Sauron's forces into this battle from atop his fell beast alongside the other eight Nazgûl. What prompted this move? Well, this is 6 days after the Battle of the Hornburg and 4 after Aragorn stared into the Orthanc stone, telling Sauron he was the heir of Isildur, showing him the sword reforged and leaving him convinced that Aragorn had the One Ring. If Sauron wanted to retain the initiative, he had to move now, otherwise Aragorn might rally Gondor to himself and the Rohirrim join his side. To try to prevent that, a force of orcs was sent out to take Caer Andros, the fortified island in the Anduin River, and then pushed on to guard the main road from Rohan to Minas Tirith. Sauron had probably hoped that Saruman would have stopped the threat from Rohan, but now this was his best hope, to slow down any help they may send to Gondor while he threw his main force at Minas Tirith. At the same time, his allies, the Corsairs of Umber, started raiding along the Gondorian coastline, along with some Haradrim. This meant that when Denethor called the banners, the response he got from the southern fiefs was underwhelming at best. They were literally fighting for their lives at that point and couldn't spare many, if anyone, to help out Minas Tirith. All told, it was quite a sensible plan. Stop Minas Tirith's allies from helping while focusing the bulk of your troops on the city itself. We're not told the exact size of the Witch King's army marching on Minas Tirith, but it definitely included 18,000 Haradrim along with their Mumakil, the 9 ring wraiths on their fell beasts, orcs and easterlings in their thousands, trolls and other beasts. It was the largest army to leave Mordor since the last alliance of elves and men, 3,000 years earlier. The first obstacle this army faced was the River Anduin and the ruined city of Osgiliath. You'll remember that at the very start of the war, Boromir, Faramir and others prevented an incursion by Sauron's forces by destroying the last bridge over the river. And now Denethor, fresh from learning of Boromir's death and Faramir's decision to let Frodo and the Ring go, sent Faramir back to Osgiliath to try to defend it. It was a mission bound to fail, and everyone knew it. The Witch King's army was just too big for the few defenders to deal with. The Gondorians did manage to inflict some casualties, but it soon transpired that the enemy had been secretly building boats on the east shore of the river for this very moment, so they could swarm across en masse rather than just a few at a time. Faramir retreated first to the Causeway Forts just outside Osgiliath, and then he was forced to lead a headlong retreat of about 12 miles back to Minas Tirith. That's nearly 20 kilometres. They were overtaken by Haradrim cavalry and would probably have all fallen, but for Prince Imrahil leading a cavalry charge out of Minas Tirith. Still, Faramir was struck down by a poisoned dart and the Black Breath and would play no further part in the war. It would be easy to see that initial flurry of battle as just an ill-judged move by Denethor made out of spite, which it was, but it actually had quite important knock-on effects. First, seeing Faramir at death's door took all of the fight out of Denethor, allowing Gandalf, Imrahil, Aragorn and others to step into the breach. The Siege of Minas Tirith might have turned out different had Denethor been giving the orders rather than focusing on funeral pyres. And although Faramir's sortie was far from a success, it did manage to slow down the enemy advance by a bit, a few hours or perhaps even a day compared to there being no opposition. The siege would have started earlier, and Théoden and Aragorn would have arrived perhaps after Minas Tirith fell. Faramir's sacrifice wasn't for nothing. Still, at the time, it looked like a clear, if small, victory for the forces of darkness. They crossed the Anduin and cleared the Ramas Ekor, the lengthy outer defensive wall that encircled the Pelennor Fields outside Minas Tirith, simply blasting holes through it and passing through. Incidentally, it was these sizeable holes in the wall that allowed the Rohirrim to ride into the Pelennor Fields so easily later in the battle. But with the city at their mercy, the Witch King's army paused for a moment and dug in outside the range of the defenders' catapults. This was the 14th of March. The defenders in the city mocked them for a bit. Why didn't they attack? It seems that the plan was to weaken and dispirit the Gondorians first. The Nazgûl continuously swooped over the city on their fell beasts, and although Tolkien doesn't give us the specifics, it's clear that their presence cast a pallor of fear and gloom into the defenders. Then came the catapults, clearly with a longer range than those of the defenders, so they couldn't reply, casting fiery rocks and the heads of vanquished foes into the bottom level of the city, setting it aflame and causing some of the defenders to flee to higher ground. Then, as midnight approached, the Witch King signalled the start of the assault. Many of the attackers died crossing the open ground outside the city, but they kept coming, hauling siege weapons, and soon they reached the wall and explosions were heard as they tried to break it down. Remember that Saruman's forces had used seemingly similar explosives in trying to take the Hornburg. Most effective of all was Grond, the spell-wrought mighty battering ram that took just 3 blows with the aid of the Witch King's fell magic to break down the gates. Minas Tirith had been breached. And all this was happening very quickly. The Great Gate and the walls had stood for centuries, and many thought them unbreachable. But now, in just a few short hours, they were in ruins. The lower level of the city was aflame, its defenders fleeing in fear. The Witch King himself rode through the gate with a mocking laugh. This was the darkest moment. Just one person stood in the Witch King's way. We read this. There, waiting, silent and still in the space before the gate, sat Gandalf upon Shadowfax. Shadowfax, who alone among the free horses of the earth endured the terror, unmoving, steadfast as a graven image in Rathdainan. "You cannot enter here," said Gandalf, and the huge shadow halted. "Go back to the abyss prepared for you. Go back. Fall into the nothingness that awaits you and your master. Go." The Black Rider flung back his hood, and behold, he had a kingly crown, and yet upon no head visible was it set. The red fires shone between it and the mantled shoulders, vast and dark. From a mouth unseen there came a deadly laugh. "Old fool," he said, "old fool, this is my hour. Do you not know death when you see it? Die now, and curse in vain." And with that he lifted high his sword, and flames ran down the blade. Gandalf did not move. And in that very moment, away behind in some courtyard of the city, a cock crowed. Shrill and clear he crowed, recking nothing of wizardry or war, welcoming only the morning that in the sky far above the shadows of death was coming with the dawn. And as if in answer, there came from far away another note. Horns, horns, horns. In dark Mindaluin's sides they dimly echoed. Great horns of the north, wildly blowing. Rohan had come at last. This was the turning point in the battle. All had seemed dark and lost, and now suddenly the dawn was here, and help had arrived. The Witch King immediately turns his attention to the battlefield outside. Minas Tirith could wait. At which point, we should probably pause for a moment and explain how the Rohirrim happened to be there with no warning, because the Witch King will have known that, with Saruman defeated, Théoden was now free to go to the aid of his Gondorian allies. Surely if the Rohirrim had been down that only road from Rohan to Minas Tirith, he would have got word of it from that force of orcs that had been placed there before the battle. Well, yes, he would have done if Théoden had taken that road, but he didn't. He went through the Druadan forest instead, a forest usually avoided by the Rohirrim and Gondorians, as they believed it to be haunted. But this time they were shown through the secret ways of the forest by the Woses, the people who lived there, and had long been persecuted and hunted by the outside world. Théoden promised, and Aragorn later delivered, independence and protection for that people going forward. In terms of this battle, it meant that the Rohirrim arrived on time, didn't have to face orcs en route, and their arrival surprised the Witch King, who hadn't expected them. The Rohirrim's first charge did immense damage to the Haradrim cavalry, clearing the northern part of the battlefield of the enemy. The Haradrim rallied, though. They still far outnumbered the 6,000 Rohirrim, and now the Witch King, back on his fell beast, was flying low and dispiriting the riders of Rohan with his fell presence. He then decided to take out King Théoden himself, landing on the battlefield. Théoden's horse reared and fell on him. It was a mortal wound. But Durnhelm, secretly Éowyn, stood over his body, and Merry snuck up behind the Witch King, and we know what happened there. If you're unsure of the exact mechanics of what happened, I did a whole other video on it if you're interested. The Witch King was dead. Théoden mortally wounded, and Éowyn and Merry afflicted by the Black Breath. Gothmog, the Lieutenant of Minas Morgul, took charge of the Witch King's army. Éomer, enraged at his father's death, led the Rohirrim in a mad charge at the enemy forces. This was undoubtedly heroic and effective in the short term, but perhaps not the most sensible tactic in that battle. Sauron's forces still had a huge numerical advantage, and those Mumakil were starting to have an effect. Even well-trained horses were panicked, and Gothmog, who, to be fair to him, seems to have reacted quickly and competently to his new command, ordered his troops to surround the Rohirrim, cutting them off from any help from Minas Tirith. Not that most of the troops in Minas Tirith were in any shape to help anyway, with one exception we'll come onto in a moment. This was when Denethor was getting all funeral pyre fixated, and Gandalf had to ride all through the city just to intervene and save Faramir's life while the bottom tier of the city was still in flames. This is the second dark point of the battle. We sometimes like to imagine the arrival of the Rohirrim as being the turning point, which it was for a while, but Sauron's numerical superiority was so huge that once the impact of that initial cavalry charge had been dealt with, and the riders were caught up in the hack and thrust of hand-to-hand combat with Mumakil running amok, things swiftly turned bad once more. Éomer and his surviving forces were surrounded and took to defending a hill. They saw the black sails of the Corsairs of Umber sailing up the Anduin and naturally assumed that this was yet more reinforcements for the enemy. At this point, Éomer even grimly starts to contemplate going down in history as Rohan's last leader, a title he held for brief hours since his uncle's death, and decides that his would be a heroic death. Of course, this was when the battle turned decisively, this time in favour of the Free Peoples. I mentioned that there was someone in Minas Tirith who was able to come to Éomer's aid. That was Prince Imrahil and his cavalry from Dol Amroth. Imrahil isn't often given the credit he deserves for his role in this battle, but he repeatedly acts bravely and brilliantly. And of course, those ships coming up the Anduin weren't the Corsairs, they were Aragorn, Legolas and Gimli with the Grey Company and as many recruits from the southern fiefs as he could bring. Not the dead men of Dunharrow, who in the films emerged in this battle, but in the books were released by Aragorn after they had seen off the Corsairs. Aragorn's force immediately charged to help Éomer on that hill, and it is suddenly Sauron's army that finds itself caught between enemies, with Imrahil's cavalry also joining the fray. Without the leadership of the Witch King, many of the orcs began to flee, leaving the Westerlings and Haradrim to fight to the death. But the battle was soon over, with the remains of Sauron's forces routed and heading back east. We don't know how many died in that battle, though it was a lot, or as Tolkien more poetically puts it, no few had fallen, renowned or nameless, captain or soldier, for it was a great battle, and the full count of it no tale has told. We do know that perhaps a third of the Rohirrim were slain in battle, and a great number of the men of Gondor too. Théoden died, as did many commanders and much of the Grey Company of Rangers. Denethor took his own life, Faramir, Eowyn and Merry were badly injured, and Minas Tirith itself was damaged seriously. On the other side, the Witch King was gone, as well as the Mumakil and large numbers of orcs and men. But Sauron probably didn't care that much. As huge as that army had been, he had an even larger force in reserve. Still, this was an unexpected reversal for Sauron. So, what went wrong with Sauron's plan here? He had actually set it up pretty well. The initial plan to rush the Anduin on pre-prepared boats, swamping any opposition, worked perfectly. Setting up his forces out of range of Minas Tirith's artillery, while softening up the defences with his own longer-range catapults and the powers of despair from the Nazgul, also worked really well. Grond was a spectacular success, breaking down the mighty city gates in no time. And even when the Rohirrim unexpectedly arrived and the Witch King even more unexpectedly died, the new commander rallied the troops, encircled the Riders of Rohan, and would surely have defeated them soon, allowing the still large force to go back to attacking a depleted Minas Tirith. When you think of it, what actually made the difference in the end was Sauron and the Witch King's old evils coming back to haunt them. The Woses led the Rohirrim through their forest, enabling them to avoid the orcs and reach Minas Tirith in time, because the forces of evil and ignorance had oppressed them for so long. Aragorn could bring reinforcements from the southern fiefs because of the aid of the dead men of Dun Harrow, finally fulfilling their oath to support Isildur against Sauron. And Merry's sword, which was able to damage the Witch King so greatly, was only made all those centuries ago to defend against the endless attacks of the Witch King. The battle was won by the consequences of centuries of oppression and malevolent action, and the heroism of outnumbered free peoples on the field of battle. Still, the Battle of the Pelennor Fields will have felt like a Pyrrhic victory for the free peoples. It averted an even greater catastrophe, rather than put them into a strong position for the rest of the war. They now had some big decisions to make about what to do next. Put bluntly, they couldn't afford another victory this costly, whereas Sauron could. Next time, we'll look at what was going on in the wider war at the same time. Sauron's little talked about attacks on Lothlorien, Erebor and Mirkwood. Then, after that, we'll turn our attention to what Aragorn did next, and how his high-risk strategy paid off. My War of the Ring playlist is on the left of your screen now, or if you'd like to see more videos on other aspects of the world of J.R.R. Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings, please click on the link to the playlist in the centre of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.